Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hello.
We've got BJ Shea on assignment. He's doing something, probably.
I don't know. Maybe sleeping.
Yeah, sure.
Is he napping?
Sure, why not?
Pooping?
Oh, dear. And running the boards is Joey Deez.
Hey.
Yeah, we're going to move past that one.
Okay.
On today's show, Joe and I will talk about Magic the Gathering with Commander Legends. If you love The Mandalorian, maybe you will love some of these anime. We have a list of the 7 animes to watch if you do. And we might get to that a little bit of more.
Nice. More.
But of course, we'll get to the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. It's going to have our blogs, podcast, and more.
More.
Or just search for us on search for BJ Shea's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, radio.com, and iTunes to find us.
Exactly. And lots of stuff going on. And one of the biggest things going on right now is Commander Legends. This was something that kind of makes sense to me because it feels like Magic the Gathering really is leaning towards the standard format, but also the Commander format. Those are the ones they seem to be really catering towards. And I love Commander. I haven't played Commander in a while, but it is my preferred format to play. Joe, I don't know how much you actually play.
I got back into it a little bit more when it was EDH. But
yeah.
Nowadays, when they changed everything, and I just got busy, to be quite honest with you, I didn't have enough time to play that lovely multiplayer format.
And yeah, generally, it is based off of, and it's kind of, usually it would be like multiplayer in like a 4-person pod, but it kind of depends on which way you're going. I mean, I've played some epic like 11 people games that lasted like 5 hours, and then actually there wasn't a clear winner. We just stop playing after like 5 hours.
I remember that. I was at a GP and you guys, some of them were dressed up in cosplaying and stuff.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. Especially when we went to GP Vegas.
Yeah.
Like, that was ridiculous. People cosplaying and then going out on the streets and other people trying to get pictures with them because they think there's something else entirely.
Cosplaying as their commander. So they were their own boss. I don't know how that works.
Yes. So Commander Legends is a new set that is coming out. 71 new legends, reprints, new mechanics, and draft boosters for Commander players, which seems very interesting. I don't understand what's going to be happening with this, but you get a box of special 20 card packs and you can draft Commander with friends. That's crazy.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, right? Like, I don't understand that, but that's a thing that you can do. Like, I don't understand how you can draft a Commander deck.
I guess all these cards are designed with multiplayer in mind, maybe, and then they also happen to work in the sense that they're not overpowered. Because, you know, you kind of need Rampant Growths and Mana Rocks and all that kind of thing in EDH/Commander, so it makes sense that that would work.
And just quickly looking, because you can find the pre-orders and stuff on, like, Amazon or your local gaming store. Like, if you can get your stuff from your local gaming store, if you have one, get it from them. But Amazon has the information as well. It says that with these booster drafts, you get 24 draft boosters to the box. You pick 3 packs and then pick 2 cards at a time, and then you can add in some lands for a 60-card commander deck. And then you can free-for-all games with up to 8 friends. They're saying, like, basically, I mean, because the box comes with 24 packs, it's perfectly set up to do a draft. And could you imagine, like, I could see, like, 2 4 pods, but what if you just did, like, 1 8-person pod with your commander decks?
Dude, that'd be insane. I mean, the most I think I've ever done was the Rochester-style drafting where you had 2 players per team, and then you drafted together, which was 2 picks at a time. I can't imagine playing in a multiplayer format after that, though. That's got to be pretty fun.
Yeah, and this is going to be crazy because also these are going to have 2 legends per pack, which is great because that's what Commander is based off around. Like, you need that. Also, they're going to have foil-etched cards. Commander Legends debuts a special kind of foil-etched cards with metallic frames. In some Commander Legends draft boosters, you can find a foil-etched showcase legend or a regular foil borderless planeswalker.
That sounds epic, dude. I would. Yeah. I mean, geez, new foiling. I mean, every foil edition that they've released in the last couple of years has been incredible.
Like, oh, they've been so beautiful.
I remember when they specifically started designing like the colors on the arts to be foil instead of the full card, so it really emphasized that like spell or that planeswalker.
Absolutely.
I mean, I lost my mind. And then they did it full art, and I was like, oh my god, so many things to collect.
And I love this too, because if you're an old school Magic player, there are some of these cards that have been reprinted in more recent ones. I think like the, what is it, like the Legacy Masters and mm-hmm, like all yep. of those different ones. But they're bringing back some names from places that you may not remember because you maybe not have played in that long. Like the Black Planeswalker is Tevesh Zat, which is from like Ice Age.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, because that's when they had like the minion, and he's a mono black commander who has some really super powerful things, but he's also bringing back, he creates Thrall tokens.
Yes.
Which were in like what, Fallen Empires.
Yeah.
Like that's when they first saw there. And they're just little 0/1 made to be sacrificed creatures, and he uses them to that effect.
Yeah, it's crazy. I see Kamal, who I think originally was a red creature that did damage, a Chroma, who has always been a white angel, she's back. This is incredible. I really think they've done a great job.
And of course, they're doing all sorts of interesting things. They're bringing back Cascade, including a Chimera Hydra that cascades 4 times.
So, 4 heads, I like it.
He costs 10 and then cascades 4 times, which is amazing on that turn, because think about it, with Cascade, it's you're flipping off the top of the cards until you get to a spell that you can cast that is 9 or under.
Yep,
so
yep.
you get to do that 4 times. Basically, you're casting any spell in your deck as long as you've done that correctly.
Card seems like a bomb.
Oh, yeah. Another thing that I love is the fact that they're doing archetypes, which makes sense if you're going to be doing a draft set. They've got elves. They've also got humans. They've got a couple of avatars, which is always fun on that end. But they've got, I think, my favorite subset of creature, pirate.
Ooh.
I have a pirate commander deck that I'm looking through some of these, and some of the things that they're doing, first off, very on theme with piracy. A lot of stealing things from opponents and even from their hand, like creatures from their hand, and then they can attack them. Like, that's just ridiculous and funny.
And pirates have come back a little bit in the standard set, too, so that kind of
really?
Makes sense. Yeah, they had like a lot of them, I think, actually. I mean, that might have been 2 sets ago, 3 sets ago, but yeah, they brought them back for a while. I also see Mana Drain and Vampiric Tutor in this set.
Yeah, some old-school staples that have been very, very expensive in the past, and some prints that are... They're not reprints. They're not really functional reprints. They're really kind of... I mean, like commander power.
Yeah.
And the one thing I'm talking about right now is absolutely 100% the Jeweled Lotus.
Oh, that's right. I forgot they did this.
Now, I'm not necessarily happy with this card.
Okay, but how about the art?
The art is beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful cards, and I want to see that card in a foil because... Wow.
Borderless foil jeweled art. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you don't know what this is and refer to, you may have seen in the past something like the Gilded Lotus, which is absolutely a commander staple. For 5 mana, it's an artifact that you can just tap for 3 color of any 1 mana. Then they had the Lotus Bloom, which was a no casting cost artifact. You literally could not cast it because it didn't have it, but it had, bless you, but it had suspend. Which meant after a certain amount of turns, I think 3 or 4 turns, it would go from exile and then it would go into play. But the original granddaddy of them all was the Black Lotus, which was a 0 casting cost artifact that you could sacrifice for 3 mana of any 1 color. Very powerful in any sort of constructed or even just, you know, kitchen table format. The most expensive card in the game. And when you attach Lotus to a card name, it immediately bumps up the price before it does anything.
That's right.
And there have been some bad ones in the past, and we don't need to talk about those. But there are ones like this one, which is straight up a commander card, because Jeweled Lotus is a 0 casting cost artifact that says sacrifice it at 3 mana of any 1 color. But you can spend this mana only to cast your commander. Now, that might be, and a lot of people are saying it's not that powerful in terms of, yeah, it'll help you cast your commander, but it's not like the hands-down best card ever, like something along the lines of a Mana Crypt or a Sol Ring, which are essentially both kind of auto-includes if you can afford them. Sol Ring, they did away with the problem with that. It's basically in every Commander deck because they've or Commander Precon because they've realized that Sol Ring is like probably the most important Commander card out there.
Sure.
But with Jeweled Lotus, people are like, well, it won't be an automatic staple in that because, well, if you've got like a 4 or 5 color commander, you're not going to want it. Or certain commanders aren't going to really necessarily need this. It's a little more niche in terms of like, well, you can only use it to cast your commander. But like that's the whole point of the whole entire like format. Most of the time, it's to cast your commander.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of arguments. One, you can only cast your commander, right? So you can't necessarily abuse the idea of casting it over and over again to get mana. So you're not like generating 15 mana for, you know, one or something like that, and then casting spells.
Yeah.
But I think to your point, I see this being a problem in two-player commander, especially.
Yes.
Because the rush to cast your commander, the more expensive commanders in particular, is so, you know, a big part of the game that, you know, I don't really see how it would be fair if you can do that that early in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Could be wrong. I haven't played a whole lot of two-player commander.
Yeah.
I've only played, you know, the multiplayer 4-player. In 4 more, you could convince me it's fair. I'm not sure that you should necessarily go into a 4-player commander game without the kind of agreement that we're not going to try to do busted things with it.
Yeah.
Because there are, I mean, you can't tell me that casting your commander every turn for free isn't unfair. You know, there are commanders that let you return 0 mana casting cost artifacts or play casting cost artifacts like that.
There's literally a 3-blue commander that lets you do that. Or yeah. Not 3-blue, but 2 colors and a blue.
Yeah.
So a 3 casting cost, which means boom, first turn.
Yeah.
Or, like, and I'm just, like, if you look at it on the competitive side, which a lot of the times, you've got to really kind of figure out what your playgroup wants to play. But if they're playing competitive commander, there really comes a problem where this is going to be the need, and it's going to be one of those things that every playgroup, like, you're going to need one for every one of your decks, or at least going to be switching it around, that sort of thing.
Yeah, like, my immediate thought is, like, what happens if my opponent just casts Kira Glasspinner on turn 1 in 2-player commander? And I'm like, I guess we're going to keep playing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not unbeatable or anything like that, but what are the play patterns that come from you casting your thing, mm-hmm. you know, thing for 3 turns earlier than you should be able to?
And that's the big thing. Like, playing a land, playing that, boom, you suddenly have a 4 casting cost commander out turn 1,
yep.
Which isn't the worst thing in the world, but think of it this way. Like, Grand Arbiter Augustine the 4th,
yep.
Like, he's blue, white, and 2 for a guy that makes all of your opponent's spells cost 1 more, and yours cost 1 less for blue and white. Like, that's crippling.
I would imagine so. Again, I can't really talk to it too much, but mm-hmm. like I said, but then if you think 4-player, right? Well, it's not that bad, right? Because it's 4 players. Like, it's not fun necessarily.
It immediately makes you the arch enemy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And a lot of the times that'll happen anyway. If someone goes turn 1 Sol Ring and, like, into turn 2, like, a Cultivator or something like that, suddenly you have, like, 6 mana on turn 3 or even more sometimes, then you're suddenly the first target. This, playing this on, like, the first turn, second turn, or third turn of the Lotus and then casting your stuff and then doing things is going to turn you into a target. So then it turns into more of a political game of when you want to use that. So I can understand that being a little bit less of the of you wanting to use it. But, I mean, still at the same point, like, printing a card like this is, I get they want to build up that hype. And it's just maybe the old school Magic player in me saying, well, what's next? I don't even know.
Yeah, I'm excited because I do think, and I've read a couple of pros, for instance, Chapin, who compared it to, well, how powerful is Dark Ritual? You know, it's not that powerful in Commander at all, especially in 4 players. And this card's, you know, better than Dark Ritual for sure, but not by a whole lot. I'm hoping that we don't end up coming back to this podcast in 2 months and going, well, guess what? It was too powerful. Because that has happened recently.
Yeah.
But I will say that at least it's a not competitive format in the sense that this isn't going to affect a GP. So if it is overpowered, hey, you know what happens? You make an agreement before you start playing your 4-player game that you're not going
to
play it.
Exactly. And that comes down to that, like, playing, like Modern Horizons, I think, was the one that had the insane Urza card, which basically, if you're playing Urza as your commander, the blue guy, before you even play, you're a target, and you're probably going to win anyway. Like, he's just too good of a card. Like, they're like, well, you could try to make him without synergy, but literally, like he's too synergistic.
Yeah, I remember seeing that card printed, and I was like, that's a mythic rare for a reason, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, even with this Jeweled Lotus, it is a mythic as well, which makes sense. Something like this should be mythic, but it also means it's going to command a really high price tag.
I can't wait to see a foil, because at this point, even if it does get banned or whatever, I don't even care. It's just so beautiful.
I might want to just get one just, like, I'm not going to spend the money it's going to cost for a foil one, but, like, yeah, maybe I'll just want to see it in the wild.
I'll give it a gift for Rev. Maybe not the foil version, but.
Oh, okay. But now it is time for
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
All right, Vicky, what do you got?
We're not obviously talking about the last episode of The Mandalorian because we got to wait till Friday.
Yep.
But I did find this article, and this is going back two episodes ago.
Okay.
With Timothy Oliphant.
Okay, so the Marshal.
Yes, yep. And he has a type. He is, you know, a sheriff. That's basically what he is in a lot of these things.
Yep, Deadwood, Justified,
and just,
anything else?
And just like any other actor, like that's a good actor. You're like, okay, are they going to eventually make an appearance in the Marvel Cinematic Universe somehow?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, I was really surprised when we heard that Angelina Jolie and Salma Hayek were going to be in the MCU, basically, with the Eternals. Yeah. Like, I was blown away. And even we got Jon Snow. We got, I'm blanking on the other guy, the other Stark.
The other Stark. Oh, yeah. Rob Stark?
No, maybe?
I don't know. Anyway, anyways.
Rob was the one that died because he was at the Red Wedding.
Oh, okay, there was Rob, yeah. Anywho, people are asking, or Cineblend asked, well, you know, here's six Marvel characters we think Timothy Oliphant should play, and I want to see if you guys agree.
Ooh. Okay.
And some of these, I don't know. I don't know who these are.
Yeah, I'm looking at this list, and I'm like, I know one of these characters.
Same. So a little, apparently... Timothy Oliphant is a 52-year-old Hawaiian-born actor. Just a heads up, so you know, kind of know what he's about. The first one they picked was Phantom Rider.
I have no idea who Phantom Rider is.
He's upon a white horse wearing an all-white costume and a white, like, with a white cape and a white hat.
Makes sense for a phantom.
Okay, but also, like, a horse, like, they're just going to keep with that whole sheriff mentality at this point.
Yes. So Carter Slade was a 19th century Ohio school teacher until a violent cattleman shot him down, forcing him to seek the aid of a Native American medicine man who revived him into the champion of justice on horseback known as the Phantom Rider. This is not to be confused with Ghost Rider, even though that was Slade's original title, and the pair have starred in Marvel Comics crossovers before. In fact, if the MCU ever brings back the Demon Hunt and Motorcyclists again, this might be a fun way to introduce the character through some cool time travel scenario, and who better than Timothy Oliphant to play the present day king of westerns, you know, to play this guy.
Wow.
I've never heard of that character.
Yeah, right?
I'm not gonna lie. It would be cool. I mean, again, he's on a horse, so can't go wrong.
So, this one is kind of funny if you've seen Santa Clarita Diet.
Yes.
It got canceled.
I know.
So for those who don't know, he plays Joel Hammond, who is the husband of Sheila, who is Drew Barrymore, who is a zombie.
Yep. And the best part is, like, he is the most supportive, husband to a zombie ever. Like eternally optimistic. One of the few roles that there's plenty of roles that he's been in, but like one of the few roles that are recognizable recently where he's not a sheriff.
Yeah.
And I love him because he's just like, I want to be my dad. Like, he's just really cool and nice, and he's like supportive, but also he's dealing with all this crazy ass.
And he's still being very supportive about it. So the character they played, they picked, is Zombie.
Wait, what?
So apparently, we could see him as a zombie by casting him as, you know, the aptly named Zombie, who was originally a scumbag businessman killed by his gardener and resurrected by voodoo as a mindless but oddly heroic creature of the undead. And it may seem a little odd for a rotting reanimated corpse to join the MCU, but they greenlit Blade and Sam Raimi is helming Doctor Strange 2, so it shows signs a franchise is ready to embrace horror. And you know, if this is not an official Marvel zombie adaptation, it seems to be like the greatest next edition.
Once again, risen from the dead with voodoo arts. Seeing a theme.
Deacon Frost, who I don't know who he is, but he says, speaking of Blade, one of the greatest arch enemies of the vampire hunter, who's actually a half-bloodsucker himself, is Deacon Frost, which was previously played by Stephen Dorff. in the original Wesley Snipes-led adaptation from 98. Mm-hmm. And of course, this depiction of the morally seeking scientist-turned creature of the night was a diversion from the middle-aged white-haired man we know him from the comics. And if this is the version that Mahershala Ali is destined to fight in the Blade reboot, why not the middle-aged gray-haired Timothy Oliphant? And it's been a while since he played a villain, and as Scream 2 and the Live Free or Die Hard can prove, he ain't bad at it. I mean, I've never seen him as a villain. I didn't see those, so I don't know.
Oddly enough, the first movie I saw him in was A Girl Next Door, and he plays like an, I don't want to say, like a weird teacher slash, not teacher, but he's like this out of high school slash college, like older dude who cons a high school guy into like giving him all this money that he raises for a fundraiser. Huh. And he's like all black leather, spiked hair.
Ooh.
And it's, I never knew who he was until later. I'm like, wow, how does everyone know him as this guy? I know him as this punk. So it's actually pretty fun to hear him maybe play that. Yeah.
And like, because he does seem very wholesome in a weird way, whether it's kind of sheriffy or, you know, like I've seen clips and bits of Santa Clarita Diet, even though I haven't seen the whole series. So he just seems very wholesome. So I can't see him as a bad guy. Another character, again, I'm not familiar with this one either, is Nitro.
Nitro.
So, you know, I think they're just trying to pick guys with white hair at this point. So for like they picked this guy's Robert Hunter, a Scranton, Pennsylvania native. And they're like that.
You
is
work
their,
at the office? Yeah.
No, he did not. Who is genetically altered by a group of Cree Nazis, essentially into a human bomb who can regenerate back into his bodily form after every self-detonation. So he's basically, like Voltorb, I can't even say it right now, the Pokemon.
Yeah.
Anyway,
oh. Voltorb.
Voltorb, thank you.
Yes.
I don't know why my
Use
tongue
explode.
Was not doing it.
No wall.
While there are many different heroes who have put up with this exploding wonder, the first one was Captain Marvel, or Mar-Vell specifically.
Yeah, Mar-Vell, yeah.
So naturally, a sequel with Brie Larson reprising her role as Carol Danvers would be the next natural place to find Nitro. Although I heard there's rumors that we're going to see Rogue in this one, in the next one, because do you know the whole thing with Rogue?
And Rogue can steal people's powers, right?
No, but do you know the connection between Captain Marvel and Rogue?
No.
So, you know how in, like, the animated series, like, from the 90s, Rogue could fly?
Yes.
So she basically touched Captain Marvel and absorbed her powers and killed her.
Yep.
Basically.
That's not nice.
And that's how she was able to retain the ability to fly and have the super strength.
Interesting.
And so she always, I think, had a bit of her in her head all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Rogue had a really, I mean, it's comics. So, like, most of the characters have very complicated histories.
Yes.
And hers is, like, super tragic because it's not like she meant to do a lot of these things.
Yeah. See, I have that confusion in my head from the 90s cartoon. I mix Rogue and Jubilee together.
That's fair.
And so I always have to go, it's not Jubilee with the sparkles. That character doesn't do anything.
She's pretty useless and annoying.
Yeah.
Rogue calls everyone Sugar, and I love it.
Sugar.
Anywho, next one, I kind of like this one.
Mm.
Out of all of them, this is the one I would vote for, is Sandman.
Okay.
So,
all right, yeah. You know, I don't hate this yet.
So we've already seen a kind of quasi-version of him as one of Mysterio's, like, elemental illusions from Spider-Man Far From Home, yet obviously that wasn't real.
Yep.
So it we also saw him, you know, played by Thomas Hayden Church in that horrible Spider-Man 3 movie.
Yeah.
But it just sounds like the kind of role Timothy Oliphant could play.
Yeah, I really kind of agree with that on that aspect.
Tough, but sympathetic. Like, be sympathetic towards him.
I was going to say, I hate to say it, but I don't know if you can do a good Sandman. I think the taste, that bad taste you got from Spider-Man 3 might just ruin that character for all time.
He can't wear that shirt, though.
No.
God forbid, please don't wear that shirt.
Well, and that's the one fun thing, actually, that they really kind of do with the MCU stuff, is that, like, with, like, Luke Cage, and even with the upcoming Scarlet Vision, or is it?
Yeah,
WandaVision.
WandaVision, sorry about that. Like, for the Halloween scene, they have them dressed up in their old school type of gear. So if they do it with that, like, maybe he's wearing the shirt because he gets, like, you know, somewhere he's stuck shirtless and he's got to just grab something and it's that shirt.
Right.
That would be cool.
Well,
but
like, I love the Easter egg version, but I don't want them to be like, this is my everyday wear, because I think they even did that with the Punisher, you know, when he gets the bloody face, like, after that prison scene, that ridiculous prison scene. So good. Or even they did that with Jessica Jones when Trish in, like, the first season's like, come on, we got to find your super superhero outfit. She pulls out this ridiculous white outfit. She's like, no.
No.
And that is the one she would wear, like, with the purple hair.
Now, and I'm also, like, kind of interested because, I mean, that's a Spider-Man villain, which would lead into Sinister Six, if you would hope so, because Sandman was a part of that, which is fun. Like, I really like that.
We already got, was it, Sinister Six was the Vulture.
Mysterio.
Which we got, Mysterio.
Scorpion, who has been a bonus scene guy.
Yeah, he's kind of,
Yeah, he was the bad guy's name, like the guy who eventually turns into Scorpion, is in jail with the Vulture. So that is kind of one of those ones that makes sense. And I mean, there's a couple others that I can't really remember right now.
I know Rhino, I think, was in it.
Yes, absolutely, because Paul Giamatti.
Yeah,
Paul
Giamatti. And then was it Kraven the Hunter, I think, part of it too?
I don't know if he was or not.
I feel like they probably have had multiple adaptations, kind of like in the Fantastic Four. They've had different people in the Fantastic Four.
Electro was the one, which
they are going to be doing. So some sort of Sinister Six coming in from multiple versions, like multiverses and stuff.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Complicated. I love it.
Did Mysterio survive then? Is Jake Gyllenhaal's character not dead?
We don't know yet.
I mean, we assumed he is.
But
never know.
Then that's the thing with Mysterio. He's like always about illusions, and they really played that up in the last Spider-Man movie, just because you don't know what's going on. Then you finally find out, like Vicky was talking about, how the Sandman, the sand monster, whatever, all those elemental monsters were just done by drones, which is super freaking cool.
God, I love that movie.
It was so good.
The last one on this list, which I feel like it's not bad, but it's not who we want.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Everyone wants John Krasinski and Emily Blunt as Invisible Woman, of course.
They need to do that. Like, that's just the one thing that I feel like would... I just like those two. Like, I think they worked really well in A Quiet Place. Mm-hmm. And I just think, like, I've seen enough of the fan art that I want John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic.
Plus, we see that, like, they can act, not like you can really act, but they can also do badass roles. Because I feel like Emily Blunt was in that one, like,
Day
After Tomorrow, whatever. So you know that they're able to do these action-filled type movies, but I would love to see them kind of be parents on this. Like, we had that, I read an... Was it the different MCU actors that, was it Timothy, how do you say his last name?
Chalamet.
Being their son. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got really dark hair and a little bit, I mean, he kind of has some Emily Blunt features because she's got some sharp features, but it's not like a Kylo Ren and the son of Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher. I'm like, that did not make sense to me at all.
And starring Johnny Storm, Rob Gronkowski.
Oh my God.
Get out.
Honestly, you just need to do body paint and he could be the Thing.
Oh my goodness.
He's such a big dude. He could just be the Thing.
Yeah. I'll take it. Either one.
Wow. Come on. I mean.
Maybe in the porn parody. Jesus.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't put past him. Even there. Holy crap.
I think it's time to
trending
just,
now.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is we're talking about like Spider-Man and a lot of this stuff, but like it looks like with Doctor Strange and WandaVision that we're going to be opening up the multiverse.
Yes.
So that kind of means that we can go into the Ultimate Universe. And I read an article. I was like looking all this stuff up when you brought it up because I'm like, this article's strange. I don't want to know. Like, I want to see other people's thoughts on this. And he actually auditioned for Iron Man, for Tony Stark. Back in the day. And wouldn't it be kind of fun if they did a little bit of the Ultimates and had like Timothy Oliphant as Tony Stark from the Ultimate Universe? Like, I would kind of like that because it's not our Tony Stark and nobody would really like him in that, but if he could still be Tony.
Oh my God. Tony Stark in the Wild Wild West times, like from that dimension.
He's not always going to have to be a sheriff.
Come on, Rev.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Well, yeah, I would love to hear other people's thoughts on this and see what they have on that. What else you got for us?
I do have kind of in the similar world. We're talking about Marvel.
Yeah.
So there have been many Marvel movies, but not all of them have been in the MCU, universe, Marvel Cinematic Universe or multiverse. Excuse me, let me redo that. Not everyone has been in the MCU, but we would love to see them somehow brought into the multiverse.
Yes.
And so Ranker.com did a list of 13 Marvel performances we would love to see brought into this multiverse.
Okay.
First one being Hugh Jackman's Wolverine. He's already said he's done playing Wolverine after Logan. He's done. But I'm like, you know, just a little cameo, buddy. You don't have to get too buff.
I mean, it's like at the end scene when he just told the guys to F off.
Oh, my God. I love that.
Yeah, that was fine. Yeah, yeah.
That's all you need. And you don't need to bulk up for that. We could even wear a suit. We'll inflate it. It's fine, dude. You get it.
You can do deep fakes now. Just place your face right on there on your old body. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Second one, of course, yes, we need this so hard, especially with Spider-Man, Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool.
Yes.
He needs to be there.
And Josh Brolin's Cable, but make no mention of the fact that he kind of looks like Thanos.
And kind of sounds like him.
Yeah, just be like, hey, you sound familiar, don't worry about it.
This one I say yes to 100%. Alfred Molina's Dr. Octopus, especially if we're doing a lot of the multiverse things with Spider-Man. Ugh.
Wasn't he a Sinister Six as well?
Ooh.
Ooh, maybe.
Maybe. So, yeah, I think we have already come up with like 7 Sinister Six members.
He did sacrifice himself at the end of that movie, but, I mean.
What if they get into a time travel? Oh,
like,
sorry, Joe.
Time travel. Where it's like right before, but like he has the epiphany, or maybe he's still bad. I don't know.
The quantum realm will fix everything.
It's like, why did you get much older in like 10 minutes?
Don't worry about it.
Michael Fassbender's and Jay McAvoy's Magneto and Xavier.
Yeah, that would be kind of fun to see.
Even just like a little pop-in.
Yeah, a lot of them would just be like as long, just like a nod to be like, yes, they exist in this multiverse. Maybe we'll see them at some point, but they do exist in that. And that's all I really want to see.
Talk more Spider-Man villains. Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin. Just Willem Dafoe in anything.
Yep.
Just bring him in.
I brought a fruitcake.
This one, I'm like, I could take it or leave it. Wesley Snipes' Blade.
You know what?
I feel like it'd just be too confusing, especially since we don't have the new Blade out yet.
If they're going, like, if the new Blade's already out and they do kind of, again, a wink and a nod sort of thing, like, in the same ways that we've heard the rumors of, like, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Cleveland. Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield, which, by the way,
I don't know why I said Cleveland.
Which, because we know somebody named Andrew Cleveland.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Oh, my gosh. That's so weird.
I think he listens. Shout out, bro. But number 7 and number 8 are Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, respectively. Number 9, Nicolas Cage's Ghost Rider.
No.
Oh, my God. That'd be so bad. I'd almost want it just for a little smidge.
Nah.
Like, he just kind of drives out in the background. You're like...
Or you just
is
see
he gonna steal the independent the Declaration of Independence? Just like throw in all his movies
that
at that
would
point.
Be great.
Yeah, right.
He just got the Declaration of Independence under his arm. Number 10, because of another wink and a nod, Chris Evans' Johnny Storm.
That would be great.
That'd be funny.
Hey, you look familiar. No.
And he's just such a jerk.
Yeah.
Like I could take that one or leave it. Same with the next one, Ben Affleck's Daredevil.
Yeah, I don't need that one, but I would like to see Colin Farrell's
Bullseye,
yes.
Because, like, the last Bullseye we saw was, you know, he was whelming.
Yeah,
He wasn't underwhelming, but he was just, well, I was whelmed.
I didn't watch that season of The Punisher, so. Oh, really?
Was it The Punisher or the last season of Daredevil?
Daredevil or
It was the last
Punisher.
Season of Daredevil because it was with Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin, and he hired him. And they never actually said his name was Bullseye, but they showed like a backstory.
Oh, maybe I did see that and I missed it. Okay, then I must have missed that one.
Because they kind of allude because he never misses, but they never call him Bullseye. They never have the costume or anything. So it took me a while. I'm like, who is this guy? I know this guy's a somebody. And then...
His backstory was real good in that one.
Yeah, they're so good at that. Oh, Jesus.
But man, can we get Kingpin again?
Yes.
Season 4 Disney.
Right there. Yeah, Vincent D'Onofrio.
Vincent D'Onofrio is like all in on it. He's like, no, anything where I can be Kingpin again. Like, yes, sign me up. I'm right here.
Oh, so good.
But he technically was in the Marvel Cinematic Universe because they are all the Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Luke Cage, all
they
that.
Still count.
They're all in the MCU. One that wasn't is Thomas Jane's Punisher. And no, we do not want the Dolph Lundgren or the Ray Stevenson one. We just want Thomas Jane.
No, yeah, we don't.
Because Thomas Jane is phenomenal. And if they're doing the multiverse, Thomas Jane along with, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name.
The guy.
John Bernthal.
Yeah, thank you. I couldn't even remember. As soon as you said Shane, I was like, oh no. Like, I just remember it was his Shane now, and I literally have talked to the man.
Because I feel bad for Thomas Jane's Punisher because he came at a time where they were afraid to do rated R Marvel movies.
And those movies were, first one was fun, but still goofy.
Yes, because I was watching the behind the scenes when I got the DVD, I think on Blockbuster. That shows you how long ago that was.
Wow.
Because that was in 2004.
Whoa.
It was like, it was so low budget, the behind the scenes were just crap. It was so, like, you can tell somebody just edited it quickly together and just played it.
Like, and he did the fan movie, like, yes, Dirty Laundry.
Dirty Laundry. Yeah. If you haven't seen that, go to YouTube.
Oh, it's so good.
Check it out. It is filthy. Ron Perlman's also in that.
That's right.
And so I feel like that was kind of his plea, like, hey, we could do a darker Punisher. And he just never got a chance to. So if we can get, you know, both Frank Castles in together somehow, even if it's like, let's revive the Punisher series, because I think they're coming up on the contract thing.
Oh.
So for those who don't know, I think Netflix had a contract with like Daredevil, like where they can't use Daredevil again. But I know the actors are still willing and I know they're wanting to do more Daredevil, but I don't know if they're allowed to officially because I didn't read the contract. if they can use the same actors, because I want to see Charlie Cox again.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So, let's get these in. This one I'm going to say no to. Last one on the list, Eric Bana's Hulk.
Yeah.
Why?
We exactly.
Don't need it.
We just don't need it. I mean, no offense to Eric Bana. He wasn't really necessarily the problem with that movie. I just don't think Ang Lee really captured what the Hulk is supposed to be about. And also, they had Hulk poodles. And sorry, that movie just.
Don't need it.
It means it doesn't exist at all. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, guys. Shoot that one into space. We're done with it.
No, thank you.
Nope.
Well, until next time, guys, stay nerdy.